Like to have us look at a scripture that was used last night, but felt like the Lord had been speaking to me for some time about an aspect of this scripture that won't take away from the word last night, but hopefully will add something to it. And that's in Galatians chapter 5, the first verse. We've just been singing about it. I'd like to have you read it again, and we'll just believe the Lord will mine something else. Something else out of this particular verse and the thought in it. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. Be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. And on the first night, Brother Buddy was telling us that the theme the Lord's been speaking and will continue to speak about is the danger. The dangers that are out there, and I think we also ought to just know that those dangers are all about us, not only out there. We had a little 9-year-old at home, and he's always, I've heard him say a few times, you know, he doesn't know where out there is, but he said, yeah, they have bad things happening out there, and for him out there, I don't know if he knows where that is. But I think we need to also think in another dimension about this danger, and let's say it's all about us. It's all around us. And here's the most serious aspect of this irreversible riptide that's sweeping the earth in every conceivable area. We don't have to go into all of these areas just to know that it's invaded all of life, all of the social structure, all of the countries of the earth. It is global in every aspect. And the most serious aspect of warning people is something you need to be aware of this morning, is that typical warnings that did bring men and women to the altar years ago, the typical preaching about heaven and hell, a heaven to gain and a hell to shun, doesn't work anymore. And there's a reason for that, is because a man wrote a book called Future Shock, and he depicted a people and a civilization worldwide that's grown up in crisis. That's all they've known. So you can't shock them and stir them out of their complacency by preaching about crisis. And even though crisis is everywhere and it's increasing, and you can tell people there was a horrible hurricane down in Florida, the average person has no concept of what Brother John was telling us about. Only somebody that went through it would actually know the devastation, the awesome power of what was inflicted upon those people. But the truth is, and you need to remember it, and I need to remember it, because when Brother Bill said the first word, that it's hard to get people to an edge of concern and an edge of commitment and an edge of service to God and keep them there. And so one of the things you and I have to realize today, it's a very difficult thing to get us to a peak. Even coaches know this, everybody knows that they say, well, those people peaked out. And there's a danger in the move of God, there's a danger among us that we could peak out. Meaning that we went to an apex, we climbed to an apex of truth and revelation and concern and commitment and dedication and consecration, and then peaked out. That's possible. So the only hope I know for that, and the thing that I'm crying out for these days, is that the Holy Spirit, the one who could come in here today and stay in this, through the days of preaching and deal with us and convict us. It's the only hope for you and me, is that the Holy Spirit will come these days and convict us so that we can't shrug it off and shake it off and walk it off after we leave here. Because the value of the word we're hearing in these days is not what we learn and forget here, but what we take with us. And so one of the problems that we have is that we are, in fact, a great segment of this congregation has been born into crisis, living in crisis, knows nothing else, so you can't shock them, you can't stir them, you can't bring them to any kind of response because they've lived in such a thing. So we say, the world is in terrible shape and crises are everywhere. They say, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But they don't hear what we're saying. And you and I have one hope that I personally believe. You know, it does say in Matthew 25 that at the end, everybody slumbered and slept. And there is a problem for us in this fact. I want to just say one more thing about that. But the global characteristics of the dilemma is different than it was in 1930. It's different than it was in 1960. The global dimensions of the crisis and the dilemma is different than it was in the 80s. Very different. Because there are certain aspects, you know, AIDS and the incurable new strain of TB knows no national boundaries or continental boundaries. The atom bomb knows no continental boundaries. There are massive things, there are global dangers in the world that knows no national boundaries. Genocide knows no national boundaries. Abortion knows no national boundaries. The euthanasia, which is a growing cult, is slowly gaining its way into the law books to put the old peacefully to sleep. And their death is gaining momentum. It's coming into the courts. And so this is not a national problem. This is a global problem. And so the forces released in the world this morning are global. The problem you and I face is tantamount to our concern today, and that is there something in us? Is there a way for us to come to the apex and to the edge of truth, revelation, commitment, and dedication, and remain there? How do we keep ourselves in the high place? How do we walk in the Spirit daily, 24 hours a day without lapsing? That's the problem that you and I have to be concerned about. And the global problem is that there are giants that have been awakened in the last decade. The last few years of history, giants have been awakened in the world. And in the religious realm, the Islamic desperateness has awakened. And their contention and their intention is to wipe out totally all Western thought, all Western religion. They are committed to this, to their death, and they are massive. Hinduism is sweeping out of their cradle where they slept so long, and they are on the move. And this business of Russia being a safe factor now, do you know that they moved all of their nuclear weapons back from the line? They cast off, like a snake would cast off its skin, some of the countries around them for a season. But you can believe, you need to believe that the deadly intent in the Russian mind is still there. And that hasn't changed. China is awakening. You can find it in the most recent periodicals that China is coming alive. And China has an intention worldwide. And this giant has awakened. These giant forces have awakened. They will not go back to sleep. They will not go away. And so this is part of the global dilemma. And so as we sit here this morning, we have a message of hope, but we also have a message of truth that we have to face. And here is how you and I have to face it very seriously. That there are three factors that are affecting you and me spiritually. And we need to be aware of these three factors. And here are the factors. One is that the spiritual temperature is cooling. And as the spiritual temperature cools in the world, in the church, even in groups that we know, something is detrimentally happening to you and me. As temperatures cool, people respond differently. And I think those that live in the northern climates would tell you that when it's 50 below zero outside, there's not too much moving around. Very little is moving around. And there's another factor that as the gross darkness increases, the darkness and the gross darkness increases, it also has an effect upon the people. And they took an experimental team to the Antarctic back, and their whole report was given in one like National Geographic or somebody. And they said that a phenomenal thing happened to some of the strongest kind of people. These were scientists, you know. And they were going to go down there and they were going to dive under the ice and they were going to do all kinds of experimentation. But they faced these two factors of extreme darkness, pitch black, total darkness. And they also came into this factor of the extreme cold. And what they discovered that in these scientists, brilliant people, that they could not function. The extreme cold and the extreme darkness rendered some of those people totally incapable of functioning. And so they had to ship them back. They had to ship them back north to the comfort zone. They could not handle the darkness and the cold. And spiritually speaking today, you need to be aware, we need to be aware, I need to be aware of the effect of the lowering spiritual temperatures and the increasing gross darkness that's not only on the people but upon the nations. So as we sit here today, we have to be aware of this effect. And there's one other factor that's happening, and that is that a greater lethargy and a sleepiness is gripping a lot of people. And there's a reason for sleepiness, the scientists tell us, that what happens that causes most people to go to sleep is that their body fills up, their blood veins fill with toxin that they accumulate during the day and from their food and from the air. In a polluted world, the toxins are everywhere. So as they invade our bloodstream, then lethargy and sleepiness grip us. And that's why people go to sleep at night and don't feel very good when they wake up in the morning, because of the invasion of toxins invading their body. But my point in telling you all of this today is not to worry about toxins, but let you know that the darkness, the invasion of the coldness, the uncleanness, the spirits that have come out of the pit these days are sweeping over the earth, and it's having an effect on all those but the sons of light. All of those but the ones who walk in the Spirit. It'll affect everybody. Now, there were some people there in Antarctica that didn't let the cold and didn't let the darkness bother them. They went on effectively disciplined in their duties and work. It was not a factor to them. Someone came to me personally and said, what do you think about the possibility of moving to Alaska to live? And I said, well, how well do you do with the cold and how well do you do with the darkness? Because that will affect you. And you have to be aware of it. Some people, it doesn't affect them because they have a stronger commitment, they have a stronger purpose, they have a stronger vision, a stronger zeal, and they cast it aside. And so we're a people that are going to have to deal with these factors today. That we not let the lowering spiritual temperatures around us. I don't know what group you're in. I don't know what the spiritual level is in the body there or wherever you come from. But you need to be well aware that it's not whether it's affecting you or not. It's how much is it affecting you. You need to be well aware of that. So just to keep us in mind of these facts, I wanted to dwell mainly on this fact of we who have been set free, not losing our freedom. Jesus knew of this time, and Luke and Matthew reported very diligently and very faithfully and quite lengthily of the concerns that they wanted us to be aware of in the end of the world in which we live. And so there were several warnings in Luke 21. He talks of a day when men and women would be led away into captivity. Jesus spoke in Matthew 21, verse 24 and verse 36. He said a snare would come upon the people. And so if we're going to warn ourselves and be warned by the Spirit of the day in which we live in order to shake off the lethargy and to not let the lowering temperatures affect us spiritually and not let the gross darkness that's increasing affect us spiritually so that we might be the sons of light, we might be the watchman on the wall, we might be alert, we might be able to warn the world, warn each other. We have to be aware that that day is upon us. I believe that a slowly encircling steel net and trap of permanent bondage is coming upon the Western world. And we live in that land, and we live in that world, and we need to be aware of that. Jesus even says in Matthew 24 and also Luke 22 that a day would come in history when those that were in Judea should flee to the mountains. And you can assume that that's strictly spiritually speaking. Or you can say, well, he does say the man shouldn't come down out of his house, shouldn't come back from the field. He was talking about a day that there would be such crisis that a predetermined plan would have to go into effect for those who would survive. And I do believe this morning or noon that many people and many of us in this place and others like us across the move of God and in Christendom are determining now the conditions under which they will ride out the storm to the end. That multitudes, they've been warned, there are people who have been in the move for the 20 years or 30 years of some others have been in it. And they've known all these things, and they watch people come and go and watch people pray about the leadings and all of these things. They've sat by and taken it in. But there is a time, and Jesus spoke of it, when some should flee. And I remember somebody being told that, and they said, well, listen, there's nothing to be afraid of. And this fellow, and I have a great respect for his spirituality, he said, listen, if God tells me to flee, I'm going to run. I'm going to flee. You know, youth are told to flee. We are told to flee. There are plenty of warnings in the scriptures about fleeing from youthful lusts and fleeing from, even Jesus, John said to some of these people that showed up out of his meeting, he says, who's warned you to flee from the wrath to come? And if Pharisees and religious people could come to his meeting and get a message that somebody ought to flee from something, then I think we ought to receive a message that it might be time for some of us to flee. At least, if you want to receive it on the highest level and you can't receive it on any other level, then it's time to flee into the rock. It's certainly time to flee to Jesus. It's time to flee into Christ. It's time to flee into something safer than being out banging around, being out winging on our own, being out with no covering, being out with no consideration of how this thing is going to wrap up and what it will affect us in doing so. That I think that the warning that Jesus gave, you can take it for the natural, you can take it literally, you can take it totally spiritual, but you have to take it. He said, when you see that day coming, the abominations setting upon Jerusalem, then it's time for you to flee to the mountains. And so you can take that any way you wish. But there is a point in the case of the foolish that was mentioned. I know Brother Buddy mentioned it in his exhortation this morning and the other day, that those foolish people, I think that would be good to just note in Matthew 25 about those foolish people. He says three things. It's the briefest possible outline, if you just wanted to have the briefest possible outline. And it was about the foolish that decided they didn't have enough. And they tried it and it wasn't it. And they were going to look around and see what else they could find. And they were told to go and buy from them to sell. And that's a rather strange thing, since we're not supposed to sell anything that we've gotten. Where are they going to find somebody to buy from? If you look that over on your own time, figure out who they're going to buy from. But the three little phrases out of verse 10 and 11, and I want you to look at those three little phrases. One is, while they went, in verse 10, while they went, and at the bottom of the verse, second little phrase was tucked in there, the door shut. While they went, I think probably one of the most dangerous things is just going somewhere. It never does say here actually where they went. It doesn't say whether they found anything. It doesn't say whether they bought anything. It just says while they went. And a lot of people are deciding to take this little trip and go somewhere. And no one can promise anybody that while they go and while they went, that the door won't be closed. In fact, there's a warning coming out through this convention from many voices that it is a critical time and that the door could well be closing or closed at any time. You just heard from Brother John Henson saying that he believes the door of grace is about to close. And it's just spoken over and over. And so it says, while they went, the door was closed. And afterwards, I think probably a saddest footnote you could imagine is afterwards. Afterwards. After it's all over, after the prize has been lost, after the door has been closed, and after those who have gone into the marriage supper are there, after that first fruits company has made the goal, afterwards, the foolish came. And there will be a revival. A lot of people are predicting a revival. At least there will be a stirring of multitudes when they find out that they've missed it and that the door has been closed. Afterwards, they will come around checking. Now, where do you get those convention tapes? Where's the next convention going to be held? Afterwards, there will be a little bit of excitement. There'll be a little bit of stirring. But of course, at that point, it'll be too late for most of us in this room who know a message of overcoming and know a message of first fruits and know a message of a prize to gain. And it will be too late. So if we're here listening, if we're in this ministry listening, we're fortunate people. And we are blessed people. We're blessed to be able to come to such a place. It's quiet. It's peaceful. It's beautiful. How many have just appreciated how the grounds and this place have been kept? I think we ought to give these people another good hand for that kind of care. Where in the world could we go to such a setting? Where in the world could we go to such a setting? So with those few remarks, I want to talk about this matter of freedom. There's been a cycle in history. It's been repeated many times. Nations like America, for instance, have flourished. There were desperate people who cried out, and God gave them a place to come and find freedom and liberty. And the forefathers wrote beautiful statements of self-determination and great statements of government. And it was a glorious history. And so a nation was blessed and a nation prospered. And there was no richer nation in the world. It was one of the most opulent nations of all time. And then something happened. Carelessness set in. And there's no one in this building that has one inkling about history that would not say perfectly clearly that we have passed through those phases. A phase of blessing. A crying out for deliverance, and multitudes, the hungry and the poor and the imprisoned came to these shores and found liberty And they made their way under that great statue. I thought it was interesting that a few years ago it was refurbished. Thank God for at least, taking the crust off of it. And hoping that it might grip a people of the blessings of our liberty in such a land, the land of the home, the brave, and the free. But something tragic has happened in the country. There's just no denial of it. That the people have gotten careless, have gotten thankless, have not appreciated their freedom, not appreciated their blessings, and a cycle has taken over in the land where carelessness has gripped us, and giant forces have moved in, invaders have moved in, those who intend to take all liberty away have moved in. They're coming from every quarter. And they're finding receptions in a nation that's sound asleep in the very midst of losing their liberty. Every once in a while, some of us refer to athletics. I coached for a season in my life. Was in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, when the little North Idaho College had a national wrestling team. They won the national wrestling championship for the small colleges in America. And so I'd gone out there on a couple occasions to watch the wrestling matches. That's pretty real. That's not this phony stuff they do on TV where these huge guys fall on each other and fake it out and make millions. Not talking about that. Talking about modified, honest-to-goodness athletics. And I've sat there by the ring and watched good men come at each other. And there's a moment, if you watch a match carefully enough, you know, we're in a different kind of match, so just get the spiritual application. We're wrestling a far greater foe, a far more clever enemy when we wrestle against powers and principalities. But the application does apply. I sat there by the ring and watched these wrestlers. And when a man, you could look into his eyes when there a moment came in the match when his opponent had gotten a grip or a hold that he knew was leading to an eventual pin or eventual defeat. You can see the gray shadow of fear that flies through their eyes. When they know that the hold that this opponent has on them of equal weight and equal skill, they know. And I don't know if you watched them come out there, but the one thing they don't want to do in the beginning of that match is to have the other guy get a hold of them anyway. So it's very important which hold is taken first, because there's a systematic progression of holds that'll eventually put the man on the mat and on his back and pinned, and he's out. And I've watched those men. I haven't been to a lot of those matches, but enough to watch the look come into the eye of the man who knows that that hold that has just been taken on him is going to be fatal.